Now, we've got, obviously, a lovely guest in today, Maximilian Bock. He's the founder and CEO of Madenew, and he's here to tell us all about what it does. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. So tell us a little bit about the company, how it started.
So it started almost as an outreach program with the University of Cambridge. It was actually a colleague of mine in architecture who pointed out that the Raspberry Pi computer, which was actually an innovation from Cambridge, sitting on my desk, could be something very interesting for schools in India, essentially, where he was originally from. So this is Aftab Jalia. And together we decided to approach the Raspberry Pi Foundation, the university, and say, why don't we try something interesting here and bring creative teaching into schools, in rural schools across India. So that's how we started. It was quite a successful program that lent itself essentially to a social venture eventually, which we founded in 2015 and have been rolling since.
So from a point of view of identifying the countries that you wanted to help, we must talk about the name of the social venture company. Now, it's Madenew, isn't it?
Yes.
Tell us why it's called Madenew. So quite a distinctive name, obviously.
Yes. It actually dates back to the very first school we interacted with. This was a school in Gujarati. It's a province of, or state actually, in India. And Madenew in the local dialect essentially means little elephant. And elephant in India is a sign of prosperity and linked to the Lord Ganesh. And I even brought a little figurine to the studio today.
You did. I will take a picture of this later. But yes, it's actually staring at me at the moment. It's positioned nicely, looking at me and watching over me to make sure I am nice to Max. I'm always nice, but anyway.
Of course. And yes, so we figured that little elephant symbolizes the prosperity that resides in every child. And sort of Madenew is there to help them realize their potential and have an exciting future, I guess.
So when did you start helping the countries, how the development, when did this all start?
So this really 2014 we started approaching the first schools. They were all based in India initially but scattered across the country. We only had contact to two schools, but they actually referred us on to the next set of schools, and in a way we've always been referred to the next batch of schools through word of mouth, through some serendipitous coincidence in that sense. And it's been a very exciting journey, I guess, traveling through all these different places, meeting so many people from such a variety of backgrounds and cultures. I mean, almost the volunteers that we nowadays send to India, Mozambique, Kenya and everything, they come back as changed people because they've immersed themselves in a culture they would have never thought possible beforehand.
And how do you get the computers over to the schools? How's the transport there? Does that all go by plane or does it... Yeah.
So actually, we chose Raspberry Pi because they're essentially a credit card-sized computer. So very small, and almost so small that we can bring them with us as part of our luggage, essentially. We've also gone down the route of saying it's meant to be a mutual buy-in. The schools buy into this program as much as we do. And so they provide keyboard, mouse, and screen, which is the bulky part of the computer. And in doing so, we have this nice hybrid model where our volunteers bring the Raspberry Pis, the local schools has the monitors, and together we make the essentially workshops work and integrate this into their curriculum.
Right. Now that makes it much more doable, doesn't it?
Definitely.
When you can be provided with the Raspberry Pi and as the schools. So when you arrive, do you find that they're very recipient, the schools too? They want to be taught, and I suppose the more the schools and other schools hear about it, the more you're getting more requests to help.
Definitely.
That must be quite hard to choose between all the schools, or do you find that you've got a list and you're just going through all the list at the moment?
No, it's much more a humane process in that sense. What we found interesting is that the ability of schools to write screens, keyboard and mouse is a natural barrier. And some schools will just not be able to afford that buy-in initially. At the same time, private schools and ones which are quite wealthy will already have computers, so they don't have that need. So we're almost addressing threshold schools, and that's a number that is quite big if you think about the number of countries we're interacting with, but small in the sense that the way we're being referred from one to the next, it's a manageable number that allows us to grow, I don't know, organically, let's say.
From a point of view of the volunteers, you're looking for volunteers, aren't you? You have to give us an idea, Max, on the process of getting the volunteers in, and then you train them.
Yep.
And then you take them over, don't you, to certain countries? Because I want to talk about the countries that you go to as well. But how do you start with getting a volunteer in?
So our biggest driver is one, motivation. The volunteers really need to show a clear interest in technology, education, and developing countries. We don't expect them to be techie, because actually we found that the more techie you are, the worse you are explaining tech to non-techie people.
Well, that's interesting.
So we've always had a wide mix of people and from all kinds of subjects and backgrounds. And we've not also limited ourselves to just university students, for instance, even though we are a university spin-out in that sense. But I've had people in other parts of the country, and now actually running two workshops, one in Austria and one in the UK, to train people to acquire the necessary skills, because essentially all of us who are comfortable using our own laptop are adequate in sort of providing that know-how. And then it's just a matter of understanding the culture, the backgrounds, and the teachers' needs to really address that. And so what we do is, from the process of registration, we start that interaction where you get in touch with the schools, you create a personal link to the teachers in charge, and before even going to the schools, you will already develop a plan of what would make sense at the school and how to deliver that.
Ah, okay. So there is a link before they arrive. So they don't actually arrive and say, who would like a computer?
Exactly.
There is a some prep done beforehand.
Yes.
So that it's not all disappointment when you arrive.
Absolutely.
And then how interesting. What about the countries? What are the countries that you are actually helping at the moment?
So originally, we started off with India. We expanded to Kenya because I happened to be working for the UN as a consultant for some time, so that enabled itself. And then through some link, I guess, university and outside, we arrived in Mozambique, where actually recently a sad thing happened, that the storm Dineo attacked essentially the coastline and destroyed many of the schools in the local area and took away the roofs. So we're now looking into supporting those schools to build back the building first, and then also in the summer coming back with another bunch of volunteers, because last year we were there working with these schools, and the former volunteers essentially have very close links there, and we communicate with them on WhatsApp. It's almost as if they're around the corner or in a different town of sort of in the UK, but and they were sharing us the tragedy that happened recently.
See, that's interesting how you can link with them as well beforehand and after and continue the projects. And it's not as if, as I said before, when you go over and you think, oh my goodness, they've got so much they need and help with. You've got to prepare. And it's so lovely that the Raspberry Pis are so small that you can take them and implement them. From a point of view of how many volunteers do you take over in one group to...
So the way we structure it is, actually, we always have pairs going to individual schools. And then the number of schools is set partially by the schools themselves we have in contact with, and then also by the number of volunteers. So last year, we were sending over, in total, 16 volunteers. And this year, we're aiming to double that number, and we have already got an interested number of volunteers. I think 22 at the moment. So we're still looking for a few more. And we basically have also expanded our remit to South America recently and are going to Ecuador and Argentina, where we have new partnerships there based on essentially what they've heard about our work in Mozambique and India.
Yeah, exactly. The countries are absolutely far and wide. How do they approach you for help, or do you approach them? How do they get to hear about it?
Usually it's local partnerships. It's not so much the Ministry of Education or something. Although what we do is, once we arrive for the first time, we get in touch with the local ministries to have that buy-in, because you don't want the project to be shut down out of the blue at some point. Luckily, this has never happened because we were following this process, but we've heard about other stories. And these people get in touch with us partly because Cambridge is actually such a vibrant and international place.
Yeah, that's true.
And it gives us opportunities to connect with essentially all corners of the world.
Yeah. Well, it's been lovely having you here, Matt. Thank you very much. I must give the website. Do you want to give the website how to get involved, which is
sure.
Madanu, which is madanu.org/get involved.
Yes,
is that right? So
exactly.
Do get involved. It sounds really interesting and worthwhile. But Maximilian Bock from the Madanu, really lovely to have you here today. Thank you very much for explaining all about
no
today
worries.
And I wish you all the best
Thank
for
you so
future
much.
Projects. Thank you very much.